Okay, so we wanted to talk today about the complicated issue of Maimid, which has a lot of aspects to it. So the Mishnah, you know, tells us that the Mishnah on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, as we've seen, Hasomech Sukaso B'Kray Hanita. What if you have a sukkah, and the sukkah is supported by leaning next to the pillars of a bed, the legs of a bed? So, according to the first position, that is kosher. Behuda, Omer Behuda says, well, it depends. Do we mean that it's just the way it's set up, that it is next to it? And if the bed wasn't there, the sukkah could still stand? Or do we mean know that the sukkah only stands because it has this support? And if that is the case, then Yehuda says, it's possible. So then the Gemara wants to know, well, why should that be? Why does Rabbi Yehuda say what he says? So my time with Rabbi Yehuda, what's Rabbi Yehuda's reason? So pligi bar Rav Zeira of Rav Abba bar Memel, chad amr b'nei she'ema keva, v'chad amr b'nei she'ma mida b'davar hamakabel tuma. So we have within this second statement that it has to be able to stand on its own two possible explanations. One is that it's not keva under such a circumstance if it needs this external support. And the other is that it's an issue of maimid b'davar hamakabel tuma. So what can you glean from this whole setup already? What kind of a scenario do we have? Essentially, first of all, it looks like how many opinions do we then have total? How many positions can one take on this issue?
Two,
maybe even more. Okay, that's a good guess, right? So how do you see three possible positions to take? La halacha, one could take three possible positions, yes? Okay. Either way, you're offering two possibilities, right? Okay, just to fill out what you're saying, right? We have two explanations of Rabbi Yehuda, which that seems to give us two possible views, which, as the Gemara tells us already, and we can figure out more, has an afkamina lahalacha, so it matters why Rabbi Yehuda says what he says. So we need to pick a side on that issue. But it seems like also there's apparently a machlokas in the Mishnah. So if that's the case, you could also disagree with the Behuda completely. So essentially there are three positions one could take here. One could take the view that it doesn't matter at all what is supporting the sukkah. One could take the opinion that it does matter. And then the question is, why does it matter? Does it matter because you need keva? Or does it matter because you can't be maimed with davra makabel tum? Right, which is going to impact halacha, right? Because let's say you have a sukkah that is keva, but what makes it keva is something that is makabel tumma. According to the middle opinion here, that should be okay. So this becomes an important issue to clarify what we're saying. Now, we've said that it's ostensibly a machlokas in the Mishnah. It's possible that it's not a machlokas in the Mishnah, right? And that's how some might understand. How could you say that it's not a machlokas in the Mishnah?
Right,
is it
just coming to explain
the Chachamim? Yeah, that maybe Rabbi Huda is coming to explain this position. And it doesn't mean to say that he's arguing, it could be okay. And that the Tanakhama is also saying that he only means it's okay when that's just the way it is. But when it's a crucial part of the puzzle, then it's not so okay. So, la halacha, as we'll see, there are a number of views. Pretty much every view is going to show up as far as Psak is concerned. Like, who says what on this issue out of those three positions? Who's involved in this discussion? Yes, I. And the Balamor. Okay, I was looking at more the Truma Sedeshin, but or sorry, at least for the round of the rush. Oh, you're saying on the issue of whether it's machlokas. I'm saying, right, the issue of question of whether it's machlokas in terms of how to read the Mishnah. But saying, bottom line, you have three possible, right, we have three possible positions one could take as a conclusion here. Right, they could say that it's not a problem at all. We don't have to worry about this whole issue, right, which is essentially the view that Truma Sedeshin seems to take. Right, and Shulchan Aruch, interestingly, does quote that view. Or could say that it is a problem, but then we have to figure out why is it a problem. So the Rush understands that the issue is keva, and that's going to be more makel because that will leave more room to allow the usage of something that's makabel tuma, as long as it's in a structure that is keva. And in fact, it's going to be pretty lenient that position because it really is only going to be an issue like the Mishnah describes. Or you have the view of other Rishonim like the Ran that no, there is a problem of Maimed. And that becomes something to pay attention to. Hi.
Is he saying that it's only Maimed or that it includes
Maimed? And what's the other thing that includes Keva?
Keva also.
Sounds like it's two different explanations. Now, the Keva thing is interesting as a discussion, right? Because why would it be surprising that Keva should affect our practical halacha here? Why would it be a little bit surprising that the idea that it should be keva, that that should affect us, practically speaking? It's a drop surprising, or maybe a more than a drop surprising. Yeah. Wouldn't you get the impression that, well, of course Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that. We've already discussed the fact that Rabbi Yehuda holds that sukkah diras keva b'inan, and we don't follow that. Right? We spoke about that a little bit yesterday, about how the whole scenario where there's a roof missing in your house, and you build a sukkah out of it, that maybe that's better even for Rabbi Yehuda's position, but we don't hold like Rabbi Yehuda. So we talked about a little bit where you can borrow his philosophy even if we don't accept the position fully. So here, doesn't that seem like this is l'shitaso in a position that we don't hold?
Are we still from Rabbi Yehuda?
But the halacha, if we're worried the halacha about Maimed, right? So then if that's only connected to Rabbi Yehuda, and that's because of Keva, so then how does that play out? So one way to address it is to say, no, we follow Rabbi Yehuda, but not the explanation that's Keva based. Right, that maybe that's the machlokas in the Gemara. Right, that according to one position in the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda says what he says because of Keva. And according to the other opinion, he says it because of Maimed. And nafkamina would be whether it has to bother us. Because if we don't follow Rabbi Yehuda about Keva in general, maybe we could ignore this din. But if it's about Maimed, then maybe we still have to worry about it, even if we don't follow him about Keva. Hi.
Most of the Rishonim seem to think that the fact that we're even discussing it at all is just an indication that we go by Rabbi Yehuda.
Yes, that's also true, right? But then we have to leave us with a question, right? So a judge pointing out that the language that you find in the Rishonim, like the Rush and the Ran, who talk about this, is how do we know? And it's interesting, by the way, because the statements that they make that's relevant to Psak in general. But how do we know when you have a machlokas in the Mishnah, a machlokas in the Gemara? How do you know who we paskin like? Sometimes we have klalim, sometimes we have rules, sometimes we don't. So how do we know here? So they point to the fact that, look, the Gemara bothers with it, that we apparently should factor in how much attention is paid to any given position. Which, if anyone who was here last year, you may recall I discussed how something that seems to be at variance with this. Last year we were learning Kiddushin, and there is a view in the Gemara that Suma is Pater for Mitzvahs. And I think I mentioned then how I was surprised to discover at one point in life that we don't follow that view, that the Suma is Pater for Mitzvahs, which happened to also be Rabbi Yehuda, coincidentally, but we don't follow that view. The reason I was surprised is because there's a major literature in the Achronim about it. There's pages and pages and pages and pages written on that position. So why is that therefore significant? Because you assume that if there's a lot of attitude paid by Bali Halacha to a certain position, maybe it's because it has some impact. So that's what the Rishonim on this sugya say pretty much explicitly, that the fact that Abaye over here pays attention, and the fact that we're trying to figure out Rabbi Yehuda's svara, all of that indicates that Rabbi Yehuda's position must be impactful to Halacha. So fine, that's all true. That's all going to be relevant. But it still leaves us with a question, because if it's contingent on Keva, so then why is it the bottom line? Why did the Amoraim already take this to be so authoritative if they don't accept his premise? So if it's because of some other reason, okay. But if it's because of Keva, so then that's interesting. So the Ran discusses this a little bit, even though the Rush seems to be the one who really needs it, right? Because the Rush says ultimately Keva is the reason. So you have to borrow from the Ran, where the Ran says that he doesn't think it's the same Keva. He thinks that there's different degrees here, and that Rabbi Huda's position here, even if it's based on Keva, is not the same as his general statement of Sukkah Diras Keva Bo'ina, which is clearly a very subtle distinction. But presumably what we mean here, just to try to give this some substance, is that, and this also is consistent with what we were saying yesterday, is that there are elements flying around here, according to everyone, of Aroi and Keva. And for Rabbi Yehuda, there's so much Keva represented that it takes him all the way to the conclusion that a sukkah should be a diras keva. But even if you don't go that far, there's still a role that keva plays in the discussion. And therefore, we could agree with him enough to say that we shouldn't have this situation in the Mishnah where you have to prop up your sukkah by leaning it against the bed. So just in terms of the whole process of halacha here, and the whole process, it's an unusual window into how we paskin on things. The fact that the Rishonim feel the need to explain why they're saying what they're saying, more so sometimes than other sugyas, is itself just very illuminating. Okay, so be that as it may, so it seems like there is at least something to talk about when it comes to maimed. How much? We have to see, but it seems like there is something to talk about. So, what is the issue with maimed? If you assume that maimed is a problem, maimed bedavra makabel tuma, so why is that the case? Why should it matter? So this seems to be a machlokas, Rashi and the Ram. Because right, what does Rashi say? I see Rashi on Chafalaf and Beis, Dibra Maskel Shema Mida. What does Rashi say? How does Rashi understand the issue? Someone help me out.
Because the stuff is supported with something which is Makabal Tumah, so it's as if the stuff itself is Makabal
Tumah. Oh, right? Exactly. Shouldn't we worry that if this is making the schach stay up, so then maybe that is schach? Right, afal pi shalamad l'psol schach. So mekabel tuma, why does that bother us? It's only an issue for schach. Well, hoel v'yikaro shal schach elu mamidin hevi ilu sikach b'davar shal mekabel tuma. We have to worry that if this is what's making the schach exist for us, so then that becomes a schach. Right, essentially saying, if you think about it, right, essentially it sounds like what Rashi is saying, that if I had a schach, and the schach was made up of some kosher stuff and some puzzle stuff, and I'll say, well, it's okay, the puzzle stuff doesn't count, because the puzzle stuff is just there to support the schach. So you say, what do you mean? That's the schach. How am I deciding to designate some of it as supportive material and some of it as material? If that's what I put up there, and that's what all is making it stay there, then what's the difference between that and schach? And presumably you can say this without coming on even to technical categories of bittul or the like. It's just a reality that if that's what's up there and that's what's doing it, so then Let's call that Tzach. Now the Ran has a different approach. All right, what's the Ran's approach? Sorry? Yes, exactly, right? It's the Gzeira the Rabbana. And that basically we're worried, okay, once this is playing a key supporting role, literally, so shouldn't we say that that's going to mislead people? Or that's going to perhaps confuse people? Because they'll say that, listen, Tzach, we know, has certain roles. And this is doing such a crucial job of holding the Tzach up, so maybe this also qualifies. And therefore, we're worried that people will misunderstand. So, just off the surface here, what's the difference whether you take Rashi's view or you take Ron's view? Out? Okay. Okay, so one major question, because the Ran spells out that issue of being Drabanan, is this issue Drabanan or Daraisa? Now, parenthetically, this is what I alluded to before, so this will come back to God willing after Yontif, but just to make you aware, so there is a very fascinating Machlokas Rishonim to be had, which is relevant to Kol Torah Kula, but is relevant to situations like this, particularly in the context of Sukkah. That if you have a sukkah that's invalid on a level midrabanan, and you use it anyway, do you say that you at least fulfill the mitzvah in HaTorah? Or do we say no, that this disqualification means it's no good to Rabbanan also? So how do you feel about that? That happens to be a major machlokas harishon. So it's a lamdash sugya, which God willing will come back to after Yontif. But that's an interesting question. Okay, so here it's going to make a difference. Because if the Ran maintains that the issue is Drabana, so you might say, okay, that's good, so I can have this issue, and at least I'll be Yotzim and Atar. So we'll have to see if that's true or not. But okay, that's one concern. That's one issue. Is it a disqualification of Drabana, or is it a qualification Daraisa? What other differences might it make? So I'll start you off with one, because this is one you wouldn't necessarily guess. But Rav Soloveitchik, in his Shiurim, points out that there is a view in the Achronim that this is not actually applicable, this concern of Maimid. Right, how does the Gemara phrase it? Right, Maimid b'davar hamakabel tumah. Now, we may translate that in our minds to Maimid with Pasul Tzach, that anything Pasul is the issue, and Davar Makabel Tumah is an example of one of the things that is Pasul. But is that necessarily the case? So there is a view in Achronim that this only applies to Davar Makabel Tumah. And if so, the Rav went on to note that could be that maybe this whole notion of Maimid here is actually a concept from Hilchos Tumah that's being applied in this context. It has to do with the nature of the laws of Tumah and Tara, where there you find such an idea that Maimid has an impact. Okay, so with that leaves us with the question then, what is the nature of this issue? Is this an issue with the Tzach then? That becomes part of the Tzach and it's Tzach puzzle and that's a problem? Or should we say no? It's an issue with some side Gzeira d'Rabbanan, and therefore maybe it has its own rules and its own limitations. And maybe it's only about Tumah, maybe it's not about all puzzle Tzach. So those questions could also have another nafkamina, which is going to be more directly applicable to our halacha l'maisa considerations here. What other nafkamina could you imagine in this question of does it become pasul tzach or is it a side gzeira d'rabbanan? Why should that matter? if it's no good either way, right, so then I don't know if that's going to matter. But there's another question, which is one of the major battlegrounds of practical halacha here, is the question of, is there a concept, either for good or for bad, of maimid to maimid? Right, what happens if you're using something to support something else that's supporting the staff? It's not supporting the staff directly, but it's supporting something in between that's holding up the staff. Does that work? So how does that connect to what we just said then? How could that perhaps fit into understanding this whole issue? Yes, Jodai?
If you're going like Rashi, you can't use that thing if it's possible for the stock. Because it's holding up the stock. What's the difference between that and the stock?
Right? So it's going to keep going, essentially. It's going to swallow the stock designation. It's going to swallow up whatever you throw up there. So, or whatever you put as part of the process. So if we're saying that which is supporting the stach is part of the stach, so it seems like this could keep going as many levels as you add. It's just going to keep getting absorbed into the stach, and it's not going to help to say something is a support of a support.
Assuming that second line also travels along?
No, they're saying that either way, that once you have something that's makabel tumah in the process, so if we're saying that there's an idea that anything that supports something else becomes a part of it, right, so then so let's say I have schach and something supporting it that's okay for schach, and then something supporting that that's not okay for schach. Let's say I have, we'll call it for simple say schach and wood and metal. Right? So if the idea is that I can't use the metal, let's take care of the wood now for a second. If Rashi is saying I can't use the metal to support the schach, because by supporting it, it becomes the schach, and now it's a problem. So then, even if I put wood in between, right, that wood becomes the schach, and now the metal is supporting the schach the same way it was a minute ago.
Why is it so easy to say that? Just extend it to the next piece.
Because if that's the whole logic how we got here in the first place, that which is supporting it is it. So then it just keeps getting absorbed into the central identity. And then whatever I use to support it, you're going to have the same problem.
Yeah, only said that's the case with the Devar Makabel
Tumah. Yeah, but it's only the Devar Makabel Tumah that's going to be a problem for us. But the logic of Maimid, if the logic is that which is supporting X is X, and so then if Y is supporting X, Y also becomes X. Right? So then your problem is going to keep going forever. But if you say that it is a gizera, that Chazal were concerned that which you're supporting with may lead to confusion, so then you can say, okay, so it's going to be a concern on the immediate level. But, like we have in general with gezeiras, we don't have to go forever. We don't have to keep counting every additional level. It's not necessarily going to be the same story. Yes?
Word of the rhyme, how do you ever see both your love or any of the principles that apply to have no functional materials up there?
Through the staff. Because
together with the staff next to it.
Okay, so that's a question which relates to other things also. Because why don't we say that, forget the Ofen HaKumah, why don't we say all the walls are a problem, right? This is an issue the Ramban asks. This is an issue that some of the other Rishonim ask, right? How could we object to Maimid if we have walls? Walls are holding up stuff. Right? So how could it be that the walls can do that when they're not kosher with stuff? So one approach is in Afanami, that's why there has to be some kind of transition from the walls to the sach, and otherwise you're going to have a problem. Or that's going to boil down halacha l'maisa to saying that you have to have walls that are made out of wood or something because of that problem. Even though ostensibly we have this rule the walls can be made of anything, but maybe only as far as the walls are concerned they can be made of anything. But because the walls also play a role in supporting the sach, then it becomes more complicated. So some of the Rishonim say that that's the part of the structure. That's not called support for the staff. That is the support. sukkah has its parts that are inherently what they are, and they're not something additional which is there to support the stack. But whatever the answer to that question is, it's going to be the same question even without the open echo. Without saying that what curves over is acceptable, we have to figure out why the wall itself is acceptable. So that's...
Neither of those answers solve why love what you're looking for would work.
Well, because you don't even need to come on to those questions, because you're saying that since you have Dofen Akuma saying that you can have the part of the Sakh that's not Sakh material, how is that okay? It's holding up the Sakh, but it's doing that even if it's not Akuma. Even if it's a normal Dofen, you have the same question.
But both of your answers about it being part of the structure differentiated between what's on top. What's on the bottom don't resolve that you can have stuff on top of
it. No, part of the structure doesn't mean necessarily differentiating from what's on top of the bottom. It means that if that's the wall, okay, so that's the part of the structure, even if the wall curves or if it doesn't curve. It means it's not there for the purposes of supporting the stack. It's there to be the wall. Just like the Ramban says, did I put the Ramban on the Marmakom? I don't remember. Right, so the Ramban talks about the floor. Like what if the Mishnah says you can have a sukkah in a tree? So how can you have a sukkah in a tree? What about the ground being supporting the whole tree, supporting the whole sukkah, and the ground is also stock? So why is that okay? So apparently, there's a distinction to be drawn. Now, some understand the Ramban to be saying that it's okay because it's maimed to maimed, it's a step removed. And others read the Ramban differently, saying, no, it's just a fundamental difference. That's not playing a role of maimed at all. Okay. That what? That's not my mitzvah.
Yeah,
I think this is a little more likely. And then you have so the question whether the Ramban is the source for this idea of my mitzvah being okay. Then you could just figure it out from other places and duel it out from other places. So here you have essentially the question of whether my mitzvah at all is a problem, practically speaking. So here there's a major discussion because the Shulchan Aruch, on the one hand, quotes the view of the Trumas Adeshin, where it doesn't seem to really be worried about Maimid. But Shulchan Aruch also puts a suffix about whether you can put a ladder on the top of the circle. And the ladder, the issue there is that it's a kli, could possibly be a kli. So then the question could be, so if you have that atop of your sukkah, so then maybe that becomes a pasul schach, because it's a kli, so therefore in the kabel tumah. And maybe it's a question whether it's across the top, or maybe it's also a question, as the Magen Avraham understands, even if it's there to prop up the schach. So this question of propping up the schach, so here the Magen Avraham has essentially a chumrah, and says that really we do worry, at least l'charchila, about propping up schach with something that is makabel tumah, whether it's metal or whether it's a kli. So the Magen Avraham says that in order to make this at least l'charchila, you have to have some kind of interruption, that you don't want to put the schach directly on top of this kli. You can put boards, let's say wood boards, on top of whatever it is, whether it's the metal or whether it's a ladder, and then that will allow you to put the schach on top of that. And that's the way the Magen Avraham understood this idea. It's the way the Vilna Gaon understood it, that the chachila, at least, you don't want to put your sukkah, your schach, directly on top of something that is makabel tuma, and therefore put something in between. Maimed to maimed, essentially. Yeah?
Just to clarify, so that wood boards are not makabel tumah, but like, let's say a metal board is makabel tumah?
A metal board, well, metal is makabel tumah.
Metal in general.
Right.
Blazing wood also in general.
So wood when it's made into a kli.
If it's a kli.
Right, so that's the concern here. Hi.
Would a 2x4, like a wooden plane, be considered a kli?
So, not necessarily a kli. The problem is, as we're going to discuss, is the issue of gzeiros tikra. So that if it's too big, if it's more than four tefachim, so then there's an additional concern which we'll talk about in a minute. So One concern is, first of all, this whole issue of maimid. So can you have schach resting on top of something that's not acceptable for schach itself? So here again, you can have a few views. One view is, yeah, it's fine. We don't have to worry about it. Which seems available to us, at least b'di'evit. And the next question is, should you assume more than that? And if so, is the Magen Avraham's suggestion enough? Because here the Chazon Ish was not satisfied with this, because he said basically anything, once you're going to say that you can't have maimid from a davar makabel tuma, so then anything that's making this day up is going to be in that category. So he doesn't accept that just having some wood in between is going to solve your problem. So there are those who are machmir for this Chazon Ish, even though it's a good question whether even the Chazon Ish requires you to be machmir for the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish is basically saying within the Magen Avraham, so the Magen Avraham, who seems to be worried about maimid, so he doesn't think that you could satisfy the concern of maimid so easily. But who says you have to be worried about maimid in the first place? Maybe that's still not such a settled issue. But if you want to be machmir for the Chazon Ish, it's very, very tricky. Because you have to essentially have nothing that's metal holding up your sukkah. And that's very challenging. How exactly are you going to build the sukkah without using any nails or screws or anything like that, or any metal frame? Yeah, it's also metal. It's also... So if you're going to say that if you could set up the sukkah in such a way that if you took out your metals, your screws and your nails, it'll still stand, so then maybe you could say it's not called maimid, but then presumably that's not the case. That's what they're there for. They're there to make it stand. So the Chazon Ish's position is a big chumrah, and it's very difficult to actually satisfy that, practically speaking. So you probably have not seen too many sukkahs that actually successfully do that.
People actually hold like that? Didn't the Chazon Ish not actually believe in that?
That's the thing.
If you believe in Hashem,
that's what I was saying. The thing is, the question of whether even the Chazon Ish really requires you to do that is questionable, but there certainly are people in B'nai Brak. Chumras of both? Yeah, so, well, we say chumras of both, it sounds like it's a contradictory chumras. They're not contradictory, it's just contingent. So that if you want to follow one view, the Chazon Ish is saying to follow it completely would mean to go to such an extent. So are there those who do that? For sure. You go to B'nai Brak, you probably can find that. But in your own lives, your lives that you interact with, you probably don't see it so much. So would not necessarily recommend insisting on this, or at all recommend insisting on this. And you see here also that even without worrying about maimed at all, there's what to rely on. Might be the view of the Shulchan Aruch. So certainly, if you're invited to people's houses, you know, we always try to go for the most shalomdik possibility. So even if they have schachs directly on something from a kabel tumah, there is what to rely on, what to rely on to make a bracha. I would not make a fuss about it. But l'chachila, to at least have something in between, so that there is more to advocate. But to go as far as the Chazon Ish, so that's much harder to accomplish, and certainly we wouldn't say it's something that you have to insist upon if you decide you want to be so machmir for your own sukkah construction, because you plan on having some very mdakdik guests over. So that's one of the major discussions as far as maimid. There are a couple of related issues which are also coming under this heading. So one issue is, what about the walls? So the walls, we know, are able to be made out of anything, pretty much. But the Gemara does say that they have to be able to stand even if it's windy. which doesn't mean it's only a problem when it's windy. It means that a wall that can't stand in the wind is not called a wall, even when it's not windy. So therefore, Shulchan Aruch writes that if you have a cloth wall, it has to be tied down very well. So here it's a question in Poskim, so a cloth wall will move with the wind, but it's a question how much it's going to move. Because presumably what it means is it moves in such a way that it's not a kosher wall anymore. Like exposing more than 3 tefachim. So that's presumably a little less likely. So to worry about this is a little bit of a chumrah, because even the canvas walls probably don't blow that much. If one has wall cloth or canvas walls and one is concerned about this, so another suggestion that you find is make extra walls inside through labud and take strips of something that's going to be tied down more securely and have them closer than 3 tefachim to each other. So you'll have make them across and have them with spaces of less than 3 tefachim, and you'll have another wall within the wall. So even if your canvas wall is blowing, but you'll still have the walls around. Now, l'chachila, we don't make labud walls for an entire sukkah. But here, the poskim write that since it's just a backup wall, and it's not the actual wall, it's just to back up the wall that you're using as your genuine wall, so then for that, labud is good enough. So that's an eitzah that some poskim have. Hi.
What's the status of the labud area with standing wind?
With standing wind?
Yeah. Would you just straps and just like, would you say there's space in between be able to withstand wind? Or like,
well, space in between can't withstand anything, right? Yeah. Can't withstand, right, so that doesn't matter. But the part that's there can withstand the wind. You know, the part that's the solid part can. So again, also just to understand the two sides of this equation, that when we say it has to be able to withstand the wind, it means even when the wind isn't blowing. But it doesn't mean, and unfortunately, as we've read too much about these past few weeks, it doesn't mean that it has to withstand the hurricane. Right? So a hurricane is a ruach she'ena metzuya, and the halacha distinguishes between the two. That a wall that can't stand in front of a ruach ha-metzuya is not called a wall. It's the kind of wind everyone can predict, and that we know happens part of natural life, so then that's a problem. But if it can't withstand the Ruach She'eina Metzuya, so then that doesn't make it a non-wall. And again, as we've seen from the news, you know, we can't, once we're saying Ruach She'eina Metzuya, so that could be anything. That could be very extreme. So we can't say that you're not considered to have a wall unless it can withstand everything that nature can throw at you. So we understand intuitively there has to be such a distinction that a real extreme hurricane kind of thing, that's not what we're talking about. But the kinds of normal winds that are predictable, so that's what it has to be able to withstand. Question?
Using lava multiple times is a different question than using lava in the Kumar, which we're from the last one, which we've seen
in the last week. Yeah, well, it is a different question, but normally we wouldn't make all our walls out of lava. But here, that we're doing it as kind of the backup wall, and that's right.
That just has strings, doesn't any form of lahad except for trapped in tennis wire.
And that's a chachila sukkah. That's there as a display because
chachila, but that works.
That's how it should work. But
that's
the
other question is,
yeah. Well, and even that sometimes maybe would work also. But yeah, it's a different kind of issue. It's not the same kind of thing as a trail piston. So that's another question, a question of the walls and how that fits into this whole issue. Another, this is a question, by the way, this Fasem has raised this issue about the walls going back and forth. To what extent is that going to be a consideration? Another issue, and this is a major discussion of the halacha, has to do with the question of sukkah mats, and also tying down the schach. So what if you want to tie down the schach and make sure that you don't lose the schach? So is that a problem? So for example, what about tying down schach with plastic ties? So plastic is no good for schach, because plastic is not the davar tzgedulei karka. So if that becomes a part of the schach, is that a problem? So here is the machlokas also, and some felt that that's problematic. Others felt that, no, you could be makel on that. And this is a big svara like this, because what's the plastic there for? The plastic is there to support, but not necessarily in the cases that we're talking about, where if you didn't have it, it's going to fall apart. The plastic is really there because of the stronger winds. That it could be that if you take the plastic away and there's a regular wind, the schach will stay there. But maybe you're concerned that occasionally there'll be a more dramatic kind of wind, and you don't want to lose your schach. Schach is quite a business nowadays. Schach could be very expensive. So if the plastic is just there to keep the schach from getting lost in an unusual circumstance, so then one could make a case that that doesn't have this whole maimed type of context to it, and that there's room to be makel about that also.
Hi.
Is that different than what
the
Shulchan
says about using like cloth or nails to put together, like the, I forget the Hebrew word, but to
adhere these. Lorna saws the poles?
Yeah, is that different?
The poles?
Is it
that's for the wall
itself.
Right, so let's say if you have it, this we could really be concerned should become a part of the schach. So let's say, no, it's not a part of the schach, it's just something that's there to keep it from flying away in circumstances that exceed what's normal and what you regularly have to worry about. So this also then brings up the issue of what about having the sukkah mats? Right, this is a big question. It makes life a lot easier to have these pre-made mats that you can use for a sukkah. And you may find that a lot of the mats have hashkachas on them. A mat is that basically you have, let's say, bamboo, right? For example, so many of us use bamboo. Bamboo is a very common schach item because it fits all the criteria. So to have bamboo rods across the top of the sukkah, that should work pretty well. But that's a lot of work to put individual bamboo rods up, and has all kinds of inconveniences. So what if instead of having individual bamboo rods across the sukkah, you have a pre-made item, which basically is bamboo or something similar, probably something lighter, but the same kind of idea, where you have all these slats that are bamboo-like, and they happen to be tied together. So is that a concern? So one concern is, first of all, what's tying them together? So if what's tying them together is nylon or something like that, again, it's dover makabel tuma, or so something that's not gidulam ar, it's rather really is the issue. So then that could be a problem. But what if it's tied together with stuff that's naturally grown fibers? So it could be schach. Does that create any other issues? So potentially, yes. Potentially, there are still one or two issues to talk about. One issue is that maybe it is a kli. Right, so what mats are made like this, people sit on them, people do yoga on them, people use them as dividers, like machitzas for privacy and things like that. Right, you see these things in houses, you know, people have these kind of mats they may put up as a privacy wall, something like that. So if the mat is made for that purpose, so then we're going to be concerned, isn't that a kli? So here then it becomes a whole discussion, why is the mat made? If the mat is made to be a rug, or the mat is made to be a privacy divider, then that could be more problematic. If the mat is constructed to be schach, and it's just held together like this, so that it's going to be more convenient, so then that's a different story. So that's where you find that you have such items which are sold with hashkacha and the like. You say, why do I need hashkacha? Why don't I just go to Target and buy a mat, a bamboo mat? Because that's one of the considerations. Why was it made in the first place? Hi.
Why can't we say that the mats, you know, they're why they were created are subjective and not objective? Meaning, bought it and hasn't been used for it, now we bought it for something else.
Because as far as defining it as a kli, then the intent is going to matter. Like in Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara, intent of making it is going to matter much more than intent of usage. Now, it's a good question to bring up, though, because it affects other things here. That it's a good point of clarification for some of what we've been talking about today. So when we talk about, say, the nails or whatever, are the nails there just to protect the schach from getting lost in a big wind, or are they there to hold it up in general? So that's not an intent question as much as it's simply a metzias question. What happens if we take away the nails? Will the sukkah collapse, or will it only be damaged in a big wind? So a lot of those which sound like intent questions are really just practicality questions. Here, intent does make a difference because the laws of Tumah V'Tahara. So that's a big consideration as far as these mats are concerned. But a mat that, you know, is made for these purposes shouldn't have this issue. All right.
So would there be a way to, like, make one of those mats not useful for that purpose? That's not clear anymore?
So it's a good question how exactly you would do that. What would it take to make it not useful for that purpose? You could make it yourself, and that should address it. But there's an additional possible concern that was raised by Rabbi Yoshev. It's a question how much this is factored in. That, we mentioned before, there's the concept of gezeras tikra, that you can't use wood for schach that is made up of planks that are more than four tefach. Even though wood should be acceptable for schach, right, it follows the rules, so wood that's been cut down from a tree should be acceptable for schach. But that's only the case if it doesn't have this issue of gezeiras tikra, where the Mishnah mentions that we're afraid that once wood begins to look too much like your ceiling, that people are not going to understand the difference between the sukkah and their house. So your house could be made totally out of wood. You could have a ceiling that's made completely out of wood. So to have boards that are that big, that's going to be a problem. So let's say width. Yeah. All right, so let's say now that you don't have boards that are four tefachim, but you have a mat that is made up of little pieces of wood, and that itself is more than four tefachim. So should we say that's essentially a neser, that's essentially a plank? Because, like we mentioned yesterday when explaining Lubbed and things like that, nothing is fully complete, nothing is without spaces of air. So if you tie together 100 little pieces of wood so that it becomes one big wooden piece, so shouldn't we treat that like a neser, like a normal wooden plank? That is a problem. So that was an issue some folks raised. Rabbi Yashiv and others had these considerations. And others feel that, no, it's still fundamentally different. And one of the differences, you can fold it up. And some of the mats come, you can roll it up. That's not something you could do with a plank of wood. There is a fundamental structural difference between the kind of planks that give the appearance of being like a roof and the mats that are as big, but can be rolled up and clearly stored in a different way, and shouldn't be subject to the same consideration. Hi.
Does the bamboo poles? Like,
sorry.
If there's like a hole in your bamboo on your roof and water, like, water goes inside, would that turn into a cleat holding water?
No, because you don't want the water to be held. That's one of the things the Mishnayos talk about in terms of lachas of kalim. That the fact that it's de facto holding water doesn't make it into a kli. If you want to be storing water in it, then we'd have what to talk about. Again, it goes to Yisrael's point that the intent when it comes to Tuma and Kalim is a much bigger factor. All right, so maybe that's a good place to stop. Let's just quickly recap the main points that we spoke about. So we talked about the question of Maimid, how the Mishnah tells us that there's a problem about being next to a bed. And the Mishnah tells us, the Rabbi Yehuda said, it all depends on whether it can stand on its own or not. And the Gemara has two ways to understand him, either about Maimid or about Keva. And we said this basically gives us three possibilities for halachic conclusions. Either we're not worried about Maimid, which the Truma Sedesha and the Shulchan Aruch kind of sounds like, or we are, either because of Keva, which is the Rosh's perspective, or because of Gzeres Maimed, like the Ran says, and we have to figure out if we're saying it's Keva, how is that consistent with the fact that we don't accept Rabbi Yehuda's general Keva Kepeda, that we want Sukkah to be Diras Keva. So then we talked about what is the reason for Gzeres Maimed, if it exists. And Rashi says, or calling Gzer is already part of the answer, that Rashi says that it becomes part of the Schach, and the Ran says that it's Gzer and Drabanan, and where they may actually come to use Schach of this. And we mentioned many Nafkaminas. One Nafkamina is the question of Dreis or Drabanan. We'll get after Yontif the Sugi of how much does it matter whether something is Dreis or Drabanan. Another Nafkamina, as Rosh Alvetri pointed out, was the question of, is this a just a din in Apostle Schach, or is there some unique din about Maimid, which then theoretically could only apply to Davar Makabel Tuma, not to all Apostle Schach, like, which was one of the views that you find in the Achronim, and could then be explained by the fact that Maimid is a Tuma concept, and maybe that's why it's coming in here. Also the major question, which is the really practical point for us, the question of, is there a concept of Maimed de Maimed? Does Maimed de Maimed make it okay, or is Maimed de Maimed essentially the same thing as Maimed? So the Magen Avraham, who's worried about Maimed, he's satisfied with putting some wood or something in between, and once it's a step removed, it's okay. Chazanish was not satisfied. L'shitas HaMagen Avraham's concern was not satisfied with that, so if one wants to take all the chumras there, and have no metal anywhere in what's holding the sukkah up, again, that's a chumrah that is not necessarily so shayach, or so common at least. And then the question of to what extent do we actually makbinar that, so that's also part of the discussion. Then we talked also about some other related kind of concepts, the question of whether the walls have to be able to stand on their own even in a normal kind of wind. How much does it matter if they sway a little bit? And if they do sway, there's an etza to make lobed walls and to rely on that where you normally otherwise wouldn't, because only a backup wall. And then the question also of holding the schach down, holding it down with plastic ties. Plastic is possible for schach, but is there an argument to say that it's not there to make the schach work? It's there only to protect it under more extreme circumstances. And then the question of mats. And to what extent does mats have an issue? And what about that which is holding on to the mat? What's tying the mat down? And is the mat itself made for this purpose, or is it made for something else which could turn it into a kli that's a makabel tuma? And also the concern that was raised of Rabbi Yashiv that maybe this should be considered a neser and therefore subject to gzeiras tikra, because essentially once you're tying together all this wood to make one big wood plank, what's the difference between that and the wood plank? And we mentioned not everyone was worried about that, and one of the differences is that it's functionally different. It's able to be rolled up and have its composition affect how it's laying out, which is not the case by a regular wood plank. Alright, so I guess we'll stop there. We can go to the base medrash for minchas. Tomorrow again, I guess. So most of you, it seems, won't be here. So we wish you a ksiva v'chasima tova, a gemar chasima tova, and a wonderful year of bracha. Look forward to seeing you after Yom. What's the first day of yeshiva after Yom Tov? Is Monday? Monday. So look forward to seeing you on that Monday when, God willing, we'll start more with the more lamed shesugyos of the first parak. And those of you who will be here tomorrow, hopefully we will have shir close to 9:15 saying a few more issues of sukkah related points. All right, wish everyone a wonderful day.